Israelis, except in brutality against Palestinians. That's their one common denominator. And it's the reason why successive Israeli governments make it such a point to commit brutality, because they know this is the one thing that will bring different political forces together, while in the absence of a common enemy, we would probably be instead discussing an Israeli civil war.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you. Joe Cotrone, U.S. Coordinator, Sami Doun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Mukhaber Abusada, lecturer at the Al-Azhar University from Gaza City. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tavoy and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah wa bithalika umirtu wa ana awalul muslimin qul أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي لكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Palestinians hold massive street rallies across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. North Korea test fires four strategic cruise missiles, saying they precisely hit their preset targets. And the U.S. announces new military assistance to Ukraine on the first anniversary of the war there. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Thousands have poured into the streets across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip to protest Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. The rallies came following an earlier call by the Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den, who urged Palestinians to take to the streets to show to the world that resistance is ready to give a rapid response to any kind of Israeli aggression. Ismail Haniya, who heads the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement, issued a message lauding the massive street rallies. He said the people of Palestine and the resistance front will not allow anybody to stop the ongoing anti-Israeli uprising across the West Bank. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and more than 100 injured in the Israeli forces' Wednesday raid on the city of Nablus. A 22-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Mohammad Jababra was also killed on Friday. He succumbed to the injuries that he suffered earlier on Thursday during the Israeli attack on a refugee camp in the city of Al-Khalil. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon is joining us live from the besieged Gaza Strip. Ashraf, tell us more about the reactions regarding this Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank. How are Palestinians in Gaza responding to that?
Well, Gisu, last night at midnight, tens of thousands of people in the Gaza Strip took to the streets in almost every city, every town, every village. expressing their support for the resistance, especially armed resistance against the Israeli occupation, and expressing their anger at the Israeli atrocities that took place Wednesday when Israeli special forces raided the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, killing some dozen Palestinians, mainly civilians, and injuring over 100 others. As they marched the streets of Gaza, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime, also shouted slogans supporting the resistance, and also calling on the Palestinian Authority to allow people in the occupied West Bank to resist the occupation in all forms. At the same time, while the rallies were taking place in Gaza, which started at midnight, ended around 2 a.m. or 2:30 a.m. this morning, at the same time, rallies were taking place in the occupied West Bank cities, including Al-Khalil, Nablus, Ramallah, and almost everywhere in the occupied West Bank, and also in some places in Al-Quds as well. What happened last night with the tens of thousands of people coming out to protest shows some sort of like referendum or consensus among Palestinians that they are supporting the resistance. The reason for the rallies is the call made by the leadership of the Lion's Den in the occupied West Bank, who called on all Palestinians everywhere to take to the street at midnight to express their support. This while Hamas's bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh issued a statement saying that the resistance will not let down the people in the occupied West Bank and will not allow the Intifada or the popular uprising to end in the occupied West Bank against the Israeli regime. Let's also refer to the fact that on Thursday around 4 a.m., Palestinians in Gaza fired rockets towards the occupied territories to avenge the killing of nearly a dozen Palestinians there. What Palestinians are trying to say here, Gisu, is that Palestinian blood is the same blood everywhere Palestinians are living, whether it's the occupied West Bank, Al-Quds, Palestinian areas that were occupied in 1948, or Gaza. It shows unity among Palestinians, shows a unanimous support for the resistance, especially the armed resistance against the Israeli occupation that is guaranteed by international laws and norms, as Palestinians are people under occupation.
Thank you very much, Chef Shannon, with an elaborate explanation of the situation there in the occupied lands and also in the Gaza Strip. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the main reason behind the enmities towards the Islamic Republic is the nature of the system, which is a religious democracy. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Islamic Republic combines democracy, freedom, and religion, and this mix foils the designs by the leaders of liberal democracy to plunder global resources. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader hailed the huge turnout of people in nationwide demonstrations marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He said the annual event is a manifestation of the strong popular support for Islamic Republic. Ayatollah Khamenei called for more efforts to boost hope for a future among people. He said Iran's adversaries are pulling out all the stops to strike despair into the hearts of the Iranian nation. The European Union says it has temporarily eased sanctions on Syria to speed up deliveries following the country's devastating earthquake. The European Council said aid organizations will no longer need to seek permission from the bloc's members before sending supplies and services to Syria. The measure will last for 6 months and is taken in view of the humanitarian crisis in the country, which was exacerbated by the quake. The EU measures followed widespread criticism that Western sanctions are impeding international efforts to assist the quake-hit Syrians. The U.S. also issued a temporary sanctions waiver for Syria following the quake. The massive quake killed over 42,000 people in Turkey and more than 3,000 in Syria. In North Korea, the country has test-fired 4 strategic cruise missiles towards the sea off its east coast. towards the Korean Peninsula. The North says that the launch aims at demonstrating the country's deadly nuclear counterattack capabilities against what it calls hostile forces. Pyongyang says four cruise missiles hit the preset targets after traveling 2,000 kilometers. The launch follows a tabletop exercise at the Pentagon by the U.S. and South Korea. The two said the exercise is focused on responses to a nuclear attack by North Korea. Washington and Seoul have also stepped up military drills in the region over the past several months. Pyongyang is strongly of this opinion that it regards the ramped-up drills as a declaration of war. For more on that, we are joined by Andrew Leung, independent China specialist, who is joining us live from Hong Kong. Thank you very much, sir. Now, if you could please tell us your analysis of the situation. There seems to be a tit-for-tat going on, and this can only lead to escalation.
This is a continuing story, and nothing has really changed because the North Korea has been totally fed up with the United States for a long, long time, because the so-called six-party talks lasted for the decades, resulted in nothing, with the United States demanding total surrender by North Korea, dismantling all its defenses before the United States even consider, you know, making any concession. So this kind of attitude, of course, has been resented and has not resulted in anything meaningful for both sides. So the North Korea is now hell-bent to acquire its own nuclear weapons as well as its delivery system. It's in fact taking a leaf from the old Chairman Mao's book, because in China, under Chairman Mao, China was extremely poor, but Chairman Mao opted for acquiring nuclear defense capability against, at that time, aggressive USSR. So I think that the lesson has been learned by North Korea that it's important, as a small country, it's important to acquire its nuclear capability in face of a major hegemon, in this case, the United States.
So how do you see the situation going? Will we see more responses probably from Japan, South Korea, and the U.S.?
Well, definitely the United States and Japan and South Korea are going to hype up the situation, and South Korea particularly fears a nuclear-armed North Korea, and in fact that the capital of South Korea is very close to North Korea. It's only about less than 100 kilometers, and then there are already something like 400 cannons placed in the border, North Korean border. So North Korea did not really need nuclear weapons to attack South Korea in case for its self-defense, and because all the cannons could be fired and hundreds of them and so near to North Korean artillery bases that the capital of South Korea could be obliterated in a matter of hours by ordinary fire. But in the, I don't think that North Korea harbors any illusion of territorial conquest, nor does it have the capability. So its present acquisition or demonstration of nuclear capability and missile capability is essentially to showcase to the world, particularly its main threat, the United States, that is able to defend itself in all circumstances.
Thank you very much. From Hong Kong, we had with us Andrew Leung, independent China specialist. Moving on, 1 year on since the Ukraine war, the UN General Assembly has met to discuss the conflict. It has passed a non-binding resolution calling on Russia to pull its troops out of Ukraine. The resolution demanded the immediate and unconditional withdrawal of Russian forces. It also called for a comprehensive and lasting peace. Over 140 members of the UN General Assembly voted in favor of the resolution drafted by Germany. Stephen, seven of them voted no, while over 30, including China and India, abstained. Iran's UN ambassador, Saeed Iravani, addressed the session. He said all parties involved in the Ukraine war should abandon military ambitions, and China renewed calls for a peaceful solution.
China's position on the Ukraine issue is consistent and clear. The sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries should be respected. The purpose and principles of the UN Charter should be observed. The legitimate security concerns of all countries should be taken seriously. All efforts conducive to peaceful resolution of the crisis should be supported.
The Chinese envoy warned that the more the Ukrainian war drags on, the more ordinary people will suffer. He said sending weapons to Ukraine only diminishes the prospects of reaching peace. His comments came days after the U.S. and NATO accused Beijing of planning to supply arms to Moscow. China has dismissed that. The United States has announced $2 billion in military aid to Ukraine. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan made the announcement in an interview with CNN. He did not specify what types of weapons will be sent to Ukraine, but said Washington has no immediate plans to supply warplanes. Other Western states have recently increased military support to Ukraine as well, but they have withheld plans to send fighter jets. Russia has repeatedly warned against the military assistance, especially longer-range weapons. Moscow argues that the aid will prolong the war, and in the meantime, the U.S. says a group of seven advanced economies are planning to announce sanctions later in the day that will target countries helping Russia. The daughter of the slain African-American civil rights activist Malcolm X says that she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, and New York City police. She has accused various federal state agencies of fraudulent concealing of evidence. She claims that the evidence shows that the agencies conspired to assassinate her father. Malcolm X was an iconic leader of the African-American Muslims who was assassinated 58 years ago.
Malcolm X was the iconic leader of African American Muslims and a civil rights activist who was assassinated 58 years ago. The iconic leader was born in 1925 and was jailed for robbery in 1946. In prison, he was introduced to the Nation of Islam and became influenced by the teachings of its leader. He was assassinated at the age of 39 on the 21st of February 1965 by three men. Now, after 58 years, his daughter says federal agencies concealed evidence of his murder and she intends to sue the FBI, the CIA, New York City Police and others for his death. Eliza Shabazz accused various federal and New York government agencies of fraudulently concealing evidence. She claimed the evidence shows the agency conspired to assassinate Malcolm X. Shabazz says she seeks $100 million in damages.
For years, our family has fought for the truth to come to light concerning his murder, and we'd like our father to receive the justice that he deserves. The truth about the circumstances leading to the death of our father is important not only to his family, but to many followers, many admirers, many who look to him for guidance, for love. And it is our hope that litigation of this case will finally provide some unanswered questions. We want justice served for our father. Thank you.
The slaying of the black leader has been the subject of speculation about the potential involvement of secret government agencies in his assassination. Back then, the FBI infiltrated black rights movements in a bid to dismantle them. Malcolm X was a lead spokesman for the Nation of Islam. The group advocated separatism for black Americans. Malcolm X later split from the organization and toned down some of his radical views.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans. And muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
the savior of humanitarian values. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Today, the third of the month of Sha'ban, is one of the most auspicious dates in history. It is a day which is celebrated with devotion by the faithful whose joy cannot be dampened by the economic and political terrorism of the U.S. and its accomplices in crimes against humanity. It is the day on which the savior of faith and humanitarian values was born in Arabia, in the holy city of Medina, in the year 4 AH, corresponding to 626 AD. He was none other than the person destined to be the immortal martyr of Karbala. To be more precise, he is Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the younger grandson of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. His birthday is marked in the Islamic Republic as Ruze Pasdar, or the Day of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, for the heroic defense of this selfless force for Islam, for Iran, for the Iranian people, for the oppressed people of the world, and for humanitarian values against terrorists and terrorism of all kinds, including the state terrorism of the U.S., the Zionist and reactionary regimes. Please stay with us for an exclusive feature on this blessed occasion. I affirm, my God, with the veracity of my faith, my resolute conviction, my positive profession of your oneness, the inner depth of my consciousness, the connections of the conduits of life of my eyes, the lines on my forehead, the hollow passages of my breath, the pliable tissues of the ridge of my nose, the auditory meatuses of my ears, that's upon which my lips come together and close, the vocal movements of my tongue, the joints of my mouths, palate and jaw, the roots of my molar teeth, the organs that facilitate the swallowing of my food and drink, the stem of my brain, the hollow passages of my neck's cords, that which is enclosed in my breast cavity, the vessels of the trunk of my aorta, the veins of my heart's diaphragm, the lobes around my liver, that which is contained in my ribs, cartilage, the sockets of my joints, the contraction of my legs, the tips of my fingers, my flesh, my blood, my hair, my skin, my nerves, my windpipe, my bones, my brain, my veins, and all of my members, and what was woven upon them in the days of my suckling, what the earth has taken away from me, my sleep, my waking, my pauses, and the movements of my bowing and prostrating, that had I taken pains and striven for the duration of epochs and ages, were I too given to live that long to deliver thanks for one of your blessings, I would not be able to do so except by your favor, which would make it incumbent upon me to offer you never-ending thanks anew and to celebrate your praise afresh. What you heard was a passage that minutely describes the functions of the human organs and anatomy. It is a passage that dwells on the wonders of creation, the infinite mercy of the Lord Most High, and the humble but pivotal position of mankind in this vast universe. These are not the words of a scientist detailing the discovery he has made through experiments, nor have these words been expressed by any philosopher who arrived at a viewpoint through trial and error. And neither has any rhetorician, unsure of his own sentences and indulging in speculation, uttered such words. As a matter of fact, these words were expressed over a millennium and four centuries ago, on the 9th of the month of Dhul-Hajjah, on the plain of Arafat, near Mecca, during the Hajj pilgrimage, by a person whose lifeblood and dismemberment of his body would breathe fresh life into Islam and all humanitarian values. The identity of this person is obvious. He is none other than Imam Hussein, peace upon him, whose blessed birthday we are celebrating today. The very mention of the name of Hussein, if it swells our eyes with tears, it grants us peace of mind, tranquility of heart, succor to the spirits, and solace to the soul, while infusing our whole body and existence with a determination to stand firm against social injustice, deviation from Islamic values, threats of attack, and the devilish designs of the dastardly terrorists. Here is another passage from the same eloquently moving supplication. O Allah, I beseech you, bearing witness to your Lordship, acknowledging that you are my Lord, and to you is my return. You originated me with your blessing before I was anything worthy of mention. You created me from dust, then lodged me in the spines, secure from the vicissitudes of fortune and the vagaries of ages and years. I remained in transience from spine to womb in a time immemorial of days past and centuries bygone. Out of your tenderness, bounty, and goodness toward me, you sent me not into the domains of the leaders of unfaith, who broke your covenant and impugned your prophets. Rather, you sent me out toward the guidance which had been foreordained for me, the way which you made easy for me, in which you nurtured me. So glory be to you, glory be to you, who are originator and restorer, laudable and glorious. Holy are your names and tremendous your bounties. So which of your blessings, my God, can I enumerate or name? For which of your gifts am I able to give thanks? As should be clear to our listeners, this supplication in the Divine Court teaches us not just facts of the human anatomy, but also humanitarian values while guiding us on the straight and unwavering path towards paradise. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, needs no introduction. When he was born, his infallible mother, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon the noblest lady of all times, though beaming with joy at the birth of her second son, felt a sort of grief. His father, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the one and only commander of the faithful, looked to his cousin, the Prophet, to name the radiant boy in view of the latter's famous statement, "O Ali, your position to me is that of Aaron to Moses." Thus, since Aaron's second son was called Shobair, the Prophet, following the swift descent of Archangel Gabriel with a message from the Lord Most High, named the newborn Hussein in Arabic. A year earlier, the Prophet's elder grandson was named Hassan, the Arabic equivalent of Aaron's firstborn, Shabar. It is obvious the grandfather and the parents of the baby born this day welcomed him with tears in view of what God Almighty had already informed the Prophet. Their tears were definitely not of sorrow, but were a form of thanksgiving to the source of life for having bestowed to the child the exalted honor of martyrdom over half a century later. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was thus destined to offer the greatest sacrifice in history for salvaging the dynamism of Islam, the veracity of the noble Quran, the purity of the Prophet's Sunnah, the clarity of Hazrat Zahra's memorable sermon of Fadak to expose imposters in their true colors, the blueprint of the model government of social justice of Imam Ali, peace upon him, the throwing away of the caliphate by Imam Hassan, peace upon him, to unmask hypocrisy, and the efforts of all prophets in the face of the tyranny of Nimrud, Pharaoh, etc. Now we understand why we hail Imam Hussein, peace upon him, as the successor of the prophets Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, peace upon them, and of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, while saluting him in ziyarat known till this day as ziyarat-e-warith. That is the reason God decreed continuation of the imamat in the lineal descent of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, with the last infallible imam being Qa'im al-Mahdi, the promised savior of mankind, who will reappear in the end times, not just to avenge the innocent blood of the martyr of Karbala, but also to rid planet Earth of oppression and corruption, by establishing the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. Now we understand the meaning of the Prophet's famous phrase, Husseinun minni wa ana min Hussein, which means, Hussein is from me and I am from Hussein. This was the will of the all-wise Creator, who has made the holy shrine of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the rendezvous of the righteous from all over the world, especially on Arba'in, or the traditional 40th day anniversary following his martyrdom, when normally more than 20 million assemble in Karbala to pay homage to him. Here, the actions and the words of the grandfather of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, become clear for us, since as God says in ayahs 3 to 5 of Surah Najm, the Prophet neither errs nor speaks out of desire, and whatever he expresses is revelation revealed. No wonder the Prophet spilled for us the formula of deliverance when he said, Inna al-Husayn misbahul huda wa safinatun najah, which means, indeed, Hussein is the beacon of guidance and the ark of salvation.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
It has become crystal clear that the sanctions imposed by the USA on Syria are punitive measures that specifically target the Syrian people, children, women, old men, and young adults, with no exception for the sick or hungry children, or those trapped under the rubble of an earthquake, or the millions who now sleep out in the open in harsh weather conditions. The human tragedy that resulted from the catastrophic earthquake in Turkey and Syria is expanding because of the huge loss of life and property. However, it is crucially important at this stage for all countries of the world, specifically the Islamic nation, to collaborate to help the two peoples overcome the effects of the catastrophe and heal the wounds of the tragedy, especially the Syrian people. This is crucial given the lack of capabilities of the Syrian state to carry out operations to rescue the victims, secure those afflicted, and rebuild due to continuous international crimes committed against Syria, incited by the Zionist entity and its leadership in the United States of America. The philosophy of the American arrogance is the framework surrounding the crime committed against Syria. The crime took various forms, beginning and ending with sanctions, passing through siege and looting, continuing with strife and wars, and attempts at disintegration and division. Encompassing all these crimes is the highest interest of the Zionist entity. The entity that airdropped humanitarian aid, especially packed for tragedy-stricken Syria in the form of bombs and missiles, sent only 13 days after the greatest natural disaster that hit Syria in more than 100 years. The special Zionist package of death killed 5 civilians and wounded 20 others after targeting a residential area in the capital, Damascus. Has any other nation in modern history endured so far what Syria has? Despite Syria overcoming most of the challenge of the global war directed by Zionists and Americans against it, especially the danger of dividing the people and the land, in came the illegal Caesar's Act to complement the global Zionist Western war on Syria in an attempt to accomplish what the war failed to achieve by overthrowing the Syrian state. This hindered the Syrian state's capabilities from dealing with the earthquake disaster and at some point crippled the government institutions, impeding them from reaching certain stricken areas devastated by the disaster. All the while, the U.S. has been actively depriving Syria of its oil resources and agricultural lands looted by the Americans, destroying the bulk of its economic assets. This crime, which brought Syria to this disastrous situation through sanctions, siege, war, and looting, is what exacerbated and multiplied the earthquake catastrophe, and even made the U.S. crime committed against it with intent and persistence more dangerous than the natural disaster that hit the war-torn country. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Can overcome the disaster of the earthquake with its own capabilities and the support of its friends, but it will certainly overcome it effectively and quickly, along with all its internal crises, when the crime committed against it under American leadership and Zionist incitement stops. The crime took various forms, beginning and ending with sanctions, passing through siege and looting, continued with strife and wars and attempts to disintegrate Syria and divide it. The crime is governed by the philosophy of American arrogance as a framework, and its compass is the interest of the Zionist entity as a final goal. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Jamal Wakim, author, academic, and managing editor of the Contemporary Arab Affairs Journal. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Wakim. Now, the lack of capabilities that was master of the scene inside Syria after the devastating earthquake results from a continuous international crime against Syria, instigated by the Zionist entity and the U.S. regime, while just less than 2 weeks later, after the earthquake, we saw the Zionist entity dropping bombs on the heads of the Syrians sleeping in the comfort of their homes, of their houses in Damascus just 3 days ago. Is there a real way out for Syria from this?
Too bad. I believe that Syria will keep suffering from this situation as long as the United States is trying to destabilize the country, trying to support some separatists in northeast Syria, mainly the Qasad Kurds, and in an attempt to redraw the whole geopolitical map of the region, including Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq, based on confessional and ethnic lines. So that's why I believe that the United States didn't care much about the earthquake that happened, but saw it as an opportunity to further weaken Syria, to further try to destroy it, because what has been done by the earthquake was been done by the United States over the past 13 years now, alongside the Zionist entity. So, an added evidence is the latest Israeli strike against civilians, peaceful civilians in Damascus. I believe that, too bad, we don't have a way out so far.
Well, but the aim of the United States imposed sanctions on Syria is basically to subjugate the people, the regime and the state and the institutions of the state as well, to the will of the U.S. foreign policy. And this has been the game since the beginning of the war in 2011. So far, this has failed. Will this devastating earthquake break the will of the Syrian people this time?
I don't believe so, because the Syrians have been resilient over the past 13 years. They have been supporting, the majority of them, of course, they have been supporting their government against the attempts to destabilize it, to destabilize the country and to divide it into various states and sub-states. I believe that they will keep fighting, and they are benefiting from the support of their allies and some Arab brothers, including, for example, the support that came from Iran, Russia, Iraq, Algeria, Lebanon, and other Arab states. Not many Arab states abstentiated from giving support, but I'm talking about many Arab states that did actually send support to Syria. And Syria will benefit from this to further resist the U.S. attempts to weaken it and to bring the country to its knees.
Well, Dr. Joachim, the most important impact of U.S. sanctions on Syria was depriving it of its oil resources and of the agricultural lands as well in the northeastern part of the country, which was stolen by the Americans by destroying the bulk of what economy Syria has left and transforming it into a country that was once self-sufficient into a country that is always dependent on others to in basic needs of food, medicine, supplies, oil. So this brings the question of direct resistance against the actual physical U.S. occupation inside Syria, especially in the eastern part of the Euphrates. Is Syria in a state that would allow it to pursue such a resistance against an occupation that's already there?
I believe that the Syrians are preparing themselves for such a development. However, for the time being, I don't believe that it's within the capability of the Syrian government to support an armed resistance against the American occupation in northeast Syria. The Syrian government is trying to appease the Kurdish separatists there in order to draw them into dialogue with the government, and this is a mean for them to contain the situation. That's why they are refraining from supporting armed struggle in northeast Syria. But eventually, if the Americans persist in their occupation of this region, if they persist in supporting the separatists in their aim to divide Syria, and believe that it's out of question for the Syrians not to launch a war of resistance against this occupation.
Well, but lastly, Dr. Joachim, what the Western mainstream media is propagating on its platforms is that the U.S. has, in fact, effectively removed and lifted the sanctions of Syria for it to allow for aid to help. But you know, as much as I know, that this is not the case because the Syrian banking system is still not working. People cannot wire money to Syria to help their families and their friends. So what was that announcement about, and what will it take for the U.S. to actually ease those sanctions?
Well, the U.S. declared, made this declaration, which is a false declaration because it didn't get implemented on ground, but because they were forced to make this declaration because they were faced by a wave of indictment by the majority of the countries in the world and the majority of the people in the world. Because the American government saw itself embarrassed, and that's why it made such a vocal declaration void of any essence, actually, because as you mentioned, the banking system in Syria is still under sanctions. The Americans are still pressuring the separatist Kurds in northeast Syria not to allow aid to cross from the regions that they dominate into the government-dominated regions. There are other, sanctions that are still in place. So that's why I believe that what the Americans did was a PR, move in order to avoid embarrassment, especially after this wave of indictment by the majority of the peoples around the world.
So in less than a minute, Dr. Joachim, do you think that the help that Syria got from the states that actually broke the Caesars Act within hours from the earthquake would be sufficient for it to try and at least reconstruct what the earthquake broke?
Too bad, despite the generous aid coming from friendly and brotherly countries to Syria, like Iran, Iraq, Russia, Lebanon,
Algeria.
Jordan, Algeria, etc. However, this aid is short of helping the government restructure the whole economy, especially that it's still passing through a state of war imposed on it by the United States and the Zionist entity. So this will be short of helping Syria achieve its aim in reconstructing the country. We need more aid, we need more lavish donations and bilateral cooperation between Syria and other countries in order to be able to overcome the situation.
We actually do see that in the near future because the people in Syria do need our help very much and as soon as possible as well. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Jamal Joachim, author, academic, and managing editor of the Contemporary Arab Affairs Journal, for joining us to talk about this crucial matter. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about a new way that Israel has came up with for ethnic cleansing in Palestine.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The Israeli Knesset approved a new racist law to revoke citizenship and residency from Palestinian prisoners who carried out heroic operations against the occupation's army and its settlers who reside in the Palestinian territories of 1948 and occupied Al-Quds. Now, the law provides for the deportation of these prisoners from their hometowns immediately upon the end of their sentence to areas supposedly controlled by the Palestinian Authority. Let's see more details about this in this following report.
The Israeli Knesset has passed a law making it easier for authorities to revoke citizenship and residency from Palestinians imprisoned who carried out heroic operations against the occupation army and its settlers over what Israel designates as, quote, acts of terror, unquote. The final reading of the bill, which for the first time stipulates the deportation of Palestinians to the occupied territories, was passed last Wednesday afternoon by a vast majority of Knesset with 94 votes in support and just 10 against. This new racist law provides for the deportation of these prisoners from their hometowns immediately upon the end of their sentence to areas controlled by the Palestinian Authority. It is noticeable in the vote on this law that it came with a broad Israeli consensus among members of the government coalition and the Israeli opposition at the same time, and a dangerous indication of the dimensions of this law on the Palestinians in the occupied territories, as well as the unified Israeli position in targeting the Palestinian man, his identity, and his land. The danger of the timing of the law's adoption is that it came in an Israeli political environment that is witnessing disagreements and an escalation of the state of political tensions, conflicts, and real divisions, which reads that the Israeli occupation, when it comes to the Palestinians, they unite immediately. The targeting of this law goes beyond the issue of targeting the prisoners who carried out operations against the army of the occupation and its settlers. Rather, it is the beginning of a blatant and broad legitimization of a forced displacement and mass expulsion of Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories. The implementation of this law paves the way for the withdrawal of nationality and residency to implement displacement and ethnic cleansing projects against the Palestinians, especially against the residents of Wadi Ara, which is a Palestinian village occupied since 1948, and the appropriate circumstances waiting for the passage of this decades-old project. The danger in the law is that it flouts international and humanitarian law, and the start of its application means that it will be applied retroactively against Palestinians who were previously arrested in Israeli prisons and receive salaries from the Palestinian Prisoners Affairs Authority as released prisoners as a crime, and their citizenship will be revoked and they will be forcibly displaced from their homes. The racist Israeli law is in stark contrast to international law, which prohibits the expulsion of any citizen from his homeland and country. It also forms the basis for political precautions and the excessive use of the emergency systems that the Israeli occupation entity inherited from the British Mandate, including movement restrictions, administrative detention and expulsion based on ethnicity and Palestinian nationality.
New ways by Israel to ethnically cleanse the Palestinian state and nation. With us to discuss this issue from the occupied Al-Quds is Dr. Mohammad Halassi, academic and researcher in Zionist Israeli affairs. I want to thank you, Dr. Halassi, for being with us now. The seriousness of the timing of the adoption of the Israeli law requiring the withdrawal of citizenship and residency from Palestinian prisoners who carried out these heroic operations, it comes at a political moment in Israel where there is real division inside of the Israeli entity. So they fight over everything, but unanimously vote for expelling more native Palestinians from their lands. But why now, and what might be the repercussions of such a law?
This Israeli behavior is not limited to this decision taken by the Knesset of the occupation. Rather, Israel practiced such an act previously and in an effort by this government to implement its subjugation agenda. This is settler colonialism that did not come to coexist with the Palestinians. On the contrary, it came to replace it. In addition to the machine of oppression and force exercised by the armored vehicles and tanks, it also seeks, through the legislation it enacts, to expel the Palestinians. This law is in the service of the colonial system. When it comes to the Palestinians, the laws set by the occupation's Knesset comes to serve this colonial agenda, which ultimately aims to empty the Palestinian land of its inhabitants and replace them with the Zionist settlers. This comes, as you kindly pointed out, in light of the conditions of division experienced by Israeli society. However, this society, which shows signs of division and disintegration, comes together and unites completely from their far right to their far left when matters relate to the Palestinian rights. The Zionist left, which formed previous governments, has always watched the actions of the right towards the Palestinians and has never said a word. Now, when the Zionist far-right's fire bounces back internally on Israeli society, you see them demonstrating and shouting loudly to stop the far-right's advance and impose their internal agenda on the Israeli society. Yet, when it comes to the Palestinians, you see them unite and agree. When it comes to the Palestinians, they are one voice and one unit. This law comes to confirm the racism of this Israeli society and its unity to exclude the Palestinians. There is no difference in this society between its left, its center, and its far right. This law will inevitably backfire on the Israelis. The Israelis believe that imposing the logic of force and coercion on the Palestinians will bring security to its society. But experiences have shown that the more the Israeli coerce and penetrate with arrogance the Palestinian society, the more the Palestinians adhere to their rights, and the more these actions backfire on the Israelis, who will pay the price for their racism. We saw how the Palestinian society, with the natural reactions of its members, inflicted human losses on the Israeli society, causing it to lose security from a government that claimed that it was coming to impose security to protect the Israeli society.
Dr. Muhammad, the goal behind the law goes beyond the issue of targeting only the Palestinian prisoners. We all know how the Zionist entity thinks and the occupation thinks. Rather, it is just the beginning of a blatant and broad legitimization of forced displacement and ethnic cleansing.